You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.
Today on our show, we're talking with Mary Cerruti. She is the Executive Director and Chief Curator at the Sculpture Center in Long Island City, New York. Mary, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
To begin with, I'd like to ask you when it is that you first had your, I know a little bit about your college career, but when was it that you first had an experience with art or made you realize that you were interested in art or the art world?
Well, my mother's an artist and my father was an architect, so I think there was an awareness. I wouldn't say that, you know, it wasn't like we were going to the museum every Sunday or anything, but I think there was an aesthetic awareness and education throughout my upbringing. And I was fortunate enough in high school to take an AP art history class at the Cleveland Museum of Art. I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, and there's an amazing comprehensive museum there. And so AP art history was taught at the museum, and with one lecture, it met twice a week, and we had one lecture in the classroom, and the second meeting was in the gallery. So while there was not a huge contemporary program there, it gave me an amazing grounding and, you know, education about the history of art and an opportunity to really look directly at work, which I think really served me later and sort of sparked that initial excitement about it. When I got to college, I don't know that I was committed to art history or contemporary art as a field yet, but I did continue studying art history and fairly quickly came to think that it was the contemporary that I wanted to focus on.
Let me ask you a little bit about that first class. It was AP art history, which is advanced placement, which sounds
mm-hmm.
unusual for high school. How did you get into an advanced placement art history program?
Well, the advanced placement program is a national program that allows high school students to, it's a high school program that allows high school students to earn college credit while still in high school. So, and they offer it in different subjects. There's art history, you can take advanced placement calculus, you can take political science, you know, all sorts of college level courses that are offered at a high school level.
Because of your interest in the past or just your upbringing, you already had a leaning towards art at that point at a very young age.
Yes, I would say so.
So then what happened in college? Your next step was college, and tell me a little bit about what you were starting to talk about, your focus on contemporary art. What is it that got you interested in contemporary work?
Well, I think it evolved. You know, I went to Haverford College and Bryn Mawr, which are sister schools outside of Philadelphia. And Bryn Mawr had the art history program, and Haverford, they sort of, on certain subjects, they shared curriculum that way. So Haverford didn't have an art history program, but Bryn Mawr did. So I majored in philosophy at Haverford and art history at Bryn Mawr. And I think it was actually probably a professor named Stephen Levine, who was a modernist art historian, a Marxist modernist art historian, who, for me, the thing that I loved about art history and I think made me want to pursue it was it was like applied history. It was a way of understanding the world and learning about history and sociology and anthropology, and it seemed like all these other subjects folded into it in a way that gave me access to all kinds of knowledge bases, you know, that came up through art.
Well, that's very interesting. I mean, you talk about him as a Marxist. By that, you mean while talking about art history, he was also critical of the systems that are surrounding it and allow it to flourish.
I would say he had been trained, I believe, as a social art historian, so that his perspective on studying art meant that you studied the context in which it came from. He was not looking at the formal properties as much as the conditions and factors that went into creating the meaning in the art. So, you know, I think the first day of his class on modern art, the question was, okay, what happened in 1848? And everyone's trying to figure out what, you know, what historical events happened in 1848. And people are throwing out all kinds of things when, you know, and the critical thing in his mind was the publication of the Marxist, the Communist Manifesto. You know, nobody was really thinking that was what he was asking. You know, nobody was thinking in an art history class that was going to be the question.
Right.
You know, undergraduate college students. So it was a lesson about how but that art happens in a context. It happens within a society that has a lot of factors that contribute to how it gets produced and received.
That's very interesting.
And I think I've taken
powerful.
That with me through. And to me, I think that led to an interest in, okay, so what is going on in our current culture and how does art reflect or impact that?
And how is it consumed by that culture or co-opted
consumed
by that
by that,
culture?
How it's distributed within that culture, how it, you know, who has access to it, you know, all those questions come into play.
That's very interesting. Yeah, when I was also at SUNY Purchase and had a sociology professor, and I think at that time there was a certain backlash to that kind of teaching. I remember them being called tenured radicals, teachers who were, you know, putting art in the context of a system that was examining why it's being produced and for whom and how it's being sold, which I don't think that type of teaching is as commonplace now. But that sounds like a powerful beginning. So then what was the next step after that? Then you were in Philadelphia as an intern. Is that what happened next?
Yes, I had the opportunity as a senior in college. Mark Rosenthal at the time was the curator of 20th century art at the Philadelphia Museum, and he taught a seminar on Anselm Kiefer. He was preparing a major retrospective in collaboration with the Art Institute of Chicago, and so he was teaching a seminar, you know, sort of in conjunction with his research, and it was a combined graduate and undergraduate seminar. I had no interest in Anselm Kiefer at the time. I was not, particularly interested in painting, and I didn't know the work all that well, but it seemed to me that if you were interested in moving into the museum world, then you wanted to take the class with the museum curator. It just seemed like an opportunity to learn from someone, you know, who was practicing in the field, in a way that I might be interested in doing. So I took the Anselm Kiefer seminar and enjoyed it and learned a ton. And at the end of that semester, Mark was looking for a research assistant to work on putting together a bibliography and exhibition history for the catalog. And so he had a grant to hire someone to do that work part-time. So I went to work for him at the Philadelphia Museum, very much on a project basis. I was sort of, you know, I keep meeting people who worked at the Philadelphia Museum at that time, but I really met almost no one. There were, I think, 3 people in the 20th Century Art Department at the time. I guess 4 altogether with the admin. So I went in and I did my research and I went to the MoMA library and did my research and I turned in my work. But it was a really formative experience because I went into it thinking, of course, the curator of 20th century art at the Philadelphia Museum was, you know, the pinnacle. It would be the job that everyone would want. And it still is in many ways. But I went in and I realized, you know, Mark would get up at 5 in the morning to do a little bit of reading or writing. He'd show up at the office. He seemed to spend his entire day in meetings. And then he'd leave and say, oh, I have to go to this cocktail party at this donor's house. And, you know, and so half of his job was about, it seemed like mostly he was an administrator and raising money. And I thought, well, if that's what it is to work in a museum, I don't think I want to do that. That seems so uninteresting. And that was the job I thought I wanted in this field. So when I finished school, I spent a summer, the next summer, I ended up, that job kept getting extended, actually, because there was actually, it was sort of a detective project to do Kiefer's exhibition history at the time.
The detective project to do about Kiefer?
In Kiefer's exhibition history, because he didn't have a really good record of all the shows he had been in, so we had to do some sleuthing about, like, looking at ads and magazines and exhibition announcement cards and things to figure out what shows he had actually been in the 60s. And so the job went on, but eventually it ended. The grant ended, and I had to move on. And I think the obvious thing would have been to move to New York, but all my friends who lived in New York were working, you know, the best they could do really were internships or you know, very low paying jobs, and mostly in commercial galleries. And I really was not that interested in the gallery world. So after going to Europe and, you know, doing a few other things, I eventually moved to San Francisco, because it seemed like there was a really interesting, more experimental art scene there.
And what year was that? That was San Francisco.
I moved in 1989, and this is New Langton Arts was there, San Francisco Camera Works, Southern Exposure. You know, there was a pretty vibrant nonprofit scene in San Francisco, and in the meantime, Mark Rosenthal, which really had nothing to do with it, but he had moved to the Berkeley Art Museum, so he had been at Berkeley before Philadelphia. So when I moved, I asked him for introductions. He gave me fantastic introductions to all the important people in the art world, almost, and nobody had any work. So by chance, at an opening, I met a woman named Anne Hatch, who was the founder of Cap Street Project, and I went to work as an intern at Cap Street Project, which was commissioning site-specific installation art, and I found this hugely exciting, because we were working with artists, you know, as they would come for a period of 3 months, and they'd spend 6 weeks making the exhibition and then 6 weeks sort of interacting with the community and talking about, you know, doing lectures and talking with people. And so it really put me in contact with some amazing artists, and to be sort of right there in the midst of the production of new work, which
was the opposite of what you were doing in terms of research and digging.
Exactly.
Exactly.
But I love it.
And maybe also, the kind of...
I never turned back from that.
Right. That was more the kind of life that you wanted as a museum administrator or something that was quite different than what you saw.
I wanted to work with contemporary artists in this way that was really about, you know, about making the art and about showing the art and about communicating through art. I really had very little interest in the market, or in that kind of historical research and scholarship. I mean, I wouldn't say that I have no interest in scholarship, but I just, as a day-to-day operation, I was really excited by being involved with the production of art.
Hmm.
Even though I'm not an artist.
Right.
No. It's a little vicarious.
Sure, but that's where all the life is. I mean, it's in contrast to an administrator who's doing research or a lot of fundraising in terms of museum personnel and interaction with art. That's the most contemporary and exciting and kind of alive aspect, I would think, of museum work today. Still,
I think so. I think so.
So then next you. What happened after that? That was your introduction to this is what is exciting about the arts and what you want to do. That was essentially carried through right to the Sculpture Center.
Absolutely. Well, what happened was I spent 10 years in San Francisco. After interning for a few months, the administrative assistant job opened up. I got, you know, hired as the administrative assistant, and then I kind of worked my way up until I was the curator and program director there. You know, and got to select artists I wanted to work with, and you know, and then be their curator and their producer essentially. And I worked with amazing artists through that. And while I was there, I also did a master's at San Francisco State to in a program that doesn't exist anymore called the Inter Arts Center, and the Master's is in Interdisciplinary Studies in the Arts, and it was a program where sort of it brought together both art educators, critical theory, and artists who were interested in pursuing new genres, so people who were interested in performance and video and actually the internet, because this was 1992, 93 in the Bay Area, where some artists were actively involved in experimenting with those kinds of new technologies. And so it was an interesting master's program to be in, because it was it really looked at, you know, what were the possibilities for art, what could be called art, where does something move from the realm of, you know, technology into art, or history into art, or activism into art. And that was, to me, and, you know, this still remains an interest of mine, is, you know, art, without trying to argue for some kind of teleological trajectory for the history of art, I think what artists do is, you know, is continually ask questions. And so, as with, you know, my day job, where it was about producing art, the most exciting art was also sort of the question, was the most exciting art was where it was happening, where people weren't sure whether it was art.
Where people weren't sure whether it was art or not.
Whether you could still argue whether it was art. You know,
right.
I wasn't, you know, I was not that interested if you could, you know, put a painting on the wall and everybody knew it was a painting and it was a painting of something. And, you know, those were not, then the questions become like, well, you know, what's the varnish technique, or what, you know, what specific, you know, optical effect is going on here, or what are the color properties? Those were not interesting questions for me. The questions for me were more about where, you know, it was happening on that edge where artists were questioning whether something was art, where art met life, where it met technology, where it met activism. Those were much more, I was much more passionate about pursuing those kinds of questions.
Sure, I understand exactly. Is there an artist at that time that you remember that was important in your thinking in that area, or something that stands out as the beginning of work like that, that you thought, this is very interesting, or this is the direction that I love?
Well, there were actually so many.
sure.
I worked with Suzanne Lacey on a huge project that happened in off-site locations, that where she was doing workshops with teen mothers and creating art with them, both installation and performance programming. I worked with an artist named James Luna. These are both California artists. James Luna is a Native American artist who was working with oral histories and relocation of Native peoples from, you know, who a lot of the people, the Native Americans who lived in Oakland had been relocated from Oklahoma. So he did an installation and an audio piece related to that. You know, and then there was also, you know, sort of in a different direction, there were artists like Jim Campbell, who I worked with in, I think, 1992 or 93, you know, who was working with, you know, our vision and how I think people now have seen his work in Madison Square Park and in the Whitney Biennial, and he's, you know, now gotten quite a bit of attention for these pieces that sort of take the minimum amount of information that you can convey through pixels and convey them through, you know, and how much our brain can understand from that. So he was at the time working with, you know, sort of bringing together the human and the machine and understanding how we see.
Right.
You know, those, to me, that, you know, that was, in many ways it affirmed for me what I kind of intuitively felt, which was that artists, that people have all different ways of coming to understand material and the world. You know, we have different ways of coming to knowledge, and artists often can help us find those ways that are not the rote academic way.
Right.
That artists can be researchers and help us to come to understandings of things that by approaching it in a way that other practitioners wouldn't think to approach it, because it's not in their training to approach it that way.
Sure, that makes sense. And now we're at the present day. You're the executive director and chief curator. I would imagine it's a combination of what you originally set out for. And one, you're working, on one hand, you're working with a lot of exciting projects that are exactly what you're talking about now. But I would also imagine you're more of an administrator, and you are fundraising and in a lot of meetings during the day. Is that also the case?
Absolutely. Whenever I think back to that and think like, oh yeah, I decided I didn't want to work in a museum because I'd have thought that life was so administrative. And then I look at what I do now and think, yeah, that's life, right? I didn't escape that by going the alternative space or nonprofit route, but I would say I still find there's a lot of satisfaction in it. I mean, I think as a young person, there's a lot of idealism about what a job is and what work involves. And I think, with time, I've come to understand that that there's an amount of administration that has to happen, and you have to raise money for these things to happen. And I can take some satisfaction in that part of the job, knowing that it's enabling this other stuff to happen.
And that was something you just learned over time, because there was never a course you took, obviously, in fundraising or how to do that, but it was something that you slowly learned.
Well, I would
learned.
Say not so obviously. I mean, people do take those courses. They exist. You can be trained for that. I happen to do it all on the job. I learned it all on the job, that side of my work. I learned on the job from some very capable people that I worked with.
Well, it seems that you're on your board. I noticed Fred Wilson is the president, and I don't know if this is the case, but I would think he's one of the few artists who are in that kind of position. I know Chuck Close is on the board at the Whitney, but he's on the board. He's not president.
Well, actually, Chuck Close is no longer on the board at the Whitney, and Fred Wilson actually took the artist spot on that board.
Oh, he took the artist spot, but he's still president of the Board of Trustees for
but
the Sculpture Center.
He is still, yes, he stayed as president of our board. And I think it is unusual for an artist to be in that role. We actually have a president and a chair, so Fred is our president and provides that kind of leadership from an artistic perspective. We also have a board chair named Sasha Bauer, who's a business person and a collector, and he provides more of the fundraising leadership. Fred is someone that I worked with in San Francisco on an amazing project. I could have named him also as an example of somebody that really shaped the way I thought about these things, because he also obviously, brings, a critical perspective to history and how not only how we see history, but how institutions operate. And so he was on the board of the Sculpture Center. I think he joined in 1994, and I was hired in 1999 when the Sculpture Center was sort of at a turning point. And we had worked together in San Francisco in 1992 and remained friends. And Fred, when Sculpture Center was looking for a director, I had moved on and I was freelancing at the time in San Francisco. And we had dinner one night and he said, I don't know, this organization needs a lot of work and it's probably not a very good job, but nobody seems to really want this job, but if you wanted to move to New York, it might be a good way to get to New York. So that's how he sold me on this job. No. so I
mean, that's how we sold you on the job of working at the sculpture center.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So he's been a really important partner to me through the entire my entire tenure there. And it's been, I think it's important to the way the organization operates that we have artists on the board and in that kind of leadership position as well.
I think so too. So I'd like to hear a little bit about the Sculpture Center now. So now you're in this position and the Sculpture Center is thriving and to my mind is a very vibrant institution. You know, I think one of the more forward-thinking institutions in the New York area. How is it that you are looking to the future now at the Sculpture Center? Is there an agenda? Is it similar to the way you've done things for the past few years? What's coming up is what I'm asking, and how do you approach the future from the perspective of the Sculpture Center's exhibitions and installations?
Well, I think, you know, it's always a question when you've been somewhere for 12 years if you're the person to keep asking new questions of it. But, you know, when I came in, it was very much a question of, like, what is the Sculpture Center? What is the field of sculpture, and is there something we can do that contributes to a conversation? And I put together an artist advisory committee to help me think through those questions back in 99. And I think one of the things that was really that was obvious to me at the time and continues and is still, I think, central to the way we think about what we're doing is both that New York in particular is, you know, there's no shortage of exhibition venues. There's lots of places to show art in New York. The vast majority of them are influenced rather significantly by the market, whether they're commercial galleries or otherwise. I think the market plays a pretty pervasive role in how art is presented and received in New York. And there are not as many opportunities for artists to really have the freedom to not think about that and make new work for an audience without really regard for that. So for Sculpture Center, that remains a really critical role that we play in the New York and in the international scene, but I think especially in New York, you know, to identify artists that are not exhibiting here, maybe because they don't have a New York gallery or because their work just, you know, they just don't produce a lot of objects for sale. So, you know, in the coming year, we have, you know, the two projects that I'm curating. One is with an artist named Nari Bagramian, who's a Berlin-based artist. She was born in Iran, but has, like, as a teenager moved to Berlin. And, you know, she's been in, you know, the Venice Biennale. She's been in Berlin Biennial, Sculpture Projects Münster. She's, you know, she's had a pretty, you know, accomplished career in Europe. She's never shown in the United States. I think the work is, it takes a critical position relative to institutions. It's very context specific. She's very conscientious about how she presents the work and in what, you know, in the ways that, you know, very, very cognizant of the sort of social and political and power structures of institutions. And so the work is always a little bit responsive to that. She's working on a new project that we'll have on view in January. And then I'm working on a big public event with the artist Christoph Buschel, who, as you probably know, is a Swiss artist who has had opportunity in New York and in the United States, but since a rather messy, high-profile debacle at Mass MoCA, has not had the opportunity to show in the United States since.
I remember that. Yeah, I think he was at Marconi Gallery in quite a while ago. But then, yeah, at Mass MoCA, that seemed to be quite an extraordinary situation. Although it was a mess, it seemed to bring him even more to international fame and attention.
Well, I think certainly there are people that came to know him only through that project. But I think it's a case of people assuming that, you know, I think it was a case of that the PR in that case fed into an idea about artists as divas and entitled and you know, non-pragmatic, which I don't think is necessarily the case with Christoph. I mean, I think we don't need to go into the details of what happened at Mass MoCA, but I think in the aftermath of it, what's happened is that an artist who I think is extremely talented has an incredible ability to pinpoint some of the fissures and the snags in the social fabric through really incredibly ambitious work has been ignored based on an idea about institutional efficiency.
Hmm.
You know, art is just not an efficient process, and it's very difficult, I think, to if you're commissioning an artwork, to know exactly where you're going to end up at the other end. And I think to do that with an artist, to take that risk with them, there are very few institutions, especially in the United States, that are willing to do that. And I think, you know, the work that we see, you know, is filtered by that.
I agree, and I also think if this isn't too much of a stretch, that reaches back to that teacher that you mentioned, I think Stephen Levine, and a somewhat Marxist ideology of how systems are questioned, are integrated into the production of art, and art's role in questioning those systems and how they digest and manage themselves within the art world.
Yeah, and I think in the increasing, you know, from a purely political perspective, that's right. I would also say that I think the professionalization of the field of art has, contributed to this idea about, cycles of production and dissemination and consumption, and artists are trained not just to think critically, but to present their critical position in the right way, you know, to package their critical position in a way that a curator or a collector is going to be able to digest it. And I think that's laziness on the rest of our part. I think it's a way of, moving artists through art school and keeping the industry of art alive. But I think
you mean by just to understand exactly by not being able to present ideas that are critical in a way that's easily understandable and important. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think that. That people are trained to package that critical position in a way that, you know, that ultimately makes it not all that critical.
I see. That's very interesting. Right. It's part of the aesthetics of what's happening, but it's not actually an activist position necessarily.
Right. And I think, you know, that kind of, you know, extreme ambition and holding, you know, and being really, holding to a belief and being able to stand outside of those systems. Or, I mean, obviously, you know, I guess no one really stands outside the systems, but being able to not necessarily just go with it, you know, and having the strength to sort of be objective and be critical and be vocal and activist, that's not always rewarded in the art world that we live in.
Absolutely, but I think it's a very important aspect of you know, as I understand you to be saying, is that's part of artist's role or ability.
Absolutely.
Which is really very close to my last question, which is in closing, there are artists listening to this, students listening to this, perhaps art professionals as well. Is there something that you feel as artists are entering the world of art, which is the marketplace as well as the nonprofit arena, is there a way they should be thinking or positioning themselves in a way? You've really said it quite concisely in these last remarks, but is there something else they should be thinking? Because so much of it is, will I get a gallery? Will I get this? Or that's what's often talked about. Is there a different way or anything you want to leave artists with in terms of how to move on their, how to begin to build their quote-unquote careers in the art world?
Well, I think they have to know what kind of a career they want, because I think there is an art industry that can reward artists whose primary aim is to make things that a gallery can sell and to be successful in that realm. And I think that there are lots of examples of that, and I think that that's one route for people. I think if your interest is really being part of an inquiry about the nature of art and the nature of, you know, how we understand the world, if it's more of an epistemological or a phenomenological pursuit that got you into art, then there's sort of a different standard for success, which means, like, does each body of work set you up with another set of questions for the next body of work?
Mm.
Or when you finish a body of work, do you feel like, oh, sold it out, it looks good, you know, success? I think, you know, great artists, each body of work leads them to the next one, which is, you know, not necessarily about finding, you know, an answer in the end or a truth in the end, but continuing a conversation.
Thank you so much, Mary, for being with us on our show today. It was wonderful talking with you.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with The Art World Demystified.